Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Walnut Creek, California. Today is Monday, February 15th. It's the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 37, the second paragraph down from the top. You may think this is an extreme case, and we'll be studying that one paragraph only. And today's readers are the 12 Steps, Kim T., the 12 Traditions, Terry H., and the readers of the text are Brandy M., Betsy H., and Laura R. And the share ID for Sunday, the special edition yesterday on February 14th, is 16,403. That's 16403. And for Monday, this morning's meeting at 7 a.m., February 15th, Eastern Time, is 16,407. That's 16407. And our newcomer greeter is Lorraine N., and our announcements person is Leslie M. Thank you all for your service. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Kim T. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning. These are the 12 steps of the Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we are powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me do service. I pass.
Thank you, Kim T. And for the, I will now ask Terry H. to read our 12 traditions. Thank you, Terry.
Good morning, everybody. This is Terry H. I'm from Pensacola, Florida, and I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater through God's grace, one day at a time. I'm not cured. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Number two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority: a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me be of service.
And thank you, Terry H. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and then once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 37, the second paragraph. You may think this an extreme case, and the sharings will be on that one paragraph only. And I will now ask Brandy M. to get us started. Good morning, Brandy.
Good morning. It's Brandy M., recovered compulsive overeater in Alberta, Canada. You may think this is an extreme case. To us, it is not far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequence, but there was always the curious mental phenomena that paralleled with our sound reason. There inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. Next day, we would ask ourselves in all earnestness and sincerity how it could have happened. So when I look at this paragraph, I can really relate to just the insane thinking, like the trivial excuses of why I would pick up, or he thought putting whiskey in his milk and on a full stomach wouldn't hurt him. And, you know, I remember in my trying to control days where I would like convince myself that I could have, you know, cookies, and as long as like it was only two and in a baggie, and you know, and sometimes I would be able to do that for a few days, but it always came to the point of then I'm eating the whole box, and then I'm eating everything else that's in my kitchen, you know, because it would start the physical allergy. But in my mind, it seemed reasonable. It seemed like, why can't I moderate? Why can't I just, you know, have certain things in moderation? And, you know, what I know today, the reason why that never worked is because I have the physical allergy. You know, when I start, I can't stop. And the mental the mental obsession, which tells me these insane reasons of why I should start again. And, you know, for me, it was such a turning point where I could actually see those things happening in my mind. And although I was still picking up, I was becoming more and more aware of like, oh, wait, my brain is different. Like, look how that works in my brain, you know, and it would always end up where I would be like, okay, like, why did I do that? This is insane. And, you know, the next day it's like that earnest and sincerity of how it happened. How did I do this? And, you know, today I don't need to ask that because I'm no longer in the food. I'm neutral with the food. But in those days I did, and I always blamed myself. I always thought there was something wrong with me. And today it's like, no, there's nothing wrong with me. I just have this disease, and I've accepted who and what I am. And for me, that was such a turning point in my recovery, just accepting that I'm different, so I can't do certain things. And, you know, today I don't want to do those things with food anymore. And that's a direct result of following these precise directions and working the 12 steps and, you know, now helping others. And so with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Brandy M., for getting us started. I will remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 37, the second paragraph down. Starts with, you may think this is an extreme case, and if you have not shared, while we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So I will now open the lines for those who would like to share on this paragraph.
Penny L.C. Kathleen O.
Anyone else?
Annabelle Z.
Annabelle Z.
Mary G.
Baby.
I got Mary G. And who came in after Mary G.?
Faye.
F-A-Y-E?
Right. Correct.
Okay, got it. Faye, thank you. One more? Okay.
Sherry Josie?
No one else? Sherry Josie, okay. Thank you. That'll be our lineup for now. I will tell you who we have. Penny L.C., Kathleen O., Annabelle Z, Mary G, Faye B, and Sherry Joe. I didn't get your last initial. You can give it to me. And so if you would identify yourself and the state you're from, I'm starting with Penny L.C., followed by Kathleen O. Good morning, Penny.
Good morning. Good morning, Mo. Thank you for your service, and good morning to everyone on the line. This is Penny L.C., a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from the state of Washington. And I've picked up on the line that talks about the mental phenomenon, right? But it's inevitably ran into some insane, trivial excuse. Well, I'll tell you, my excuses, as far as I was concerned at that point, weren't trivial because they were usually wrapped up in a resentment because I lived in resentments and or fears, you know, you name it, or self-centeredness, of course. So of course I had a really good excuse for taking that first bite. And then on top of that, I could justify it and rationalize why it was okay. And so, I didn't even feel at times I needed to be checking myself. I just plunged right ahead into the food, you know, knowing that if they would just do such and such and so and so would just behave such and such a way, then, you know, I wouldn't have to eat. I mean, oh, good grief. When I think about it, it's really scary. But I am just so grateful to know that today I have a different outlook, and I don't even, well, first of all, we don't live in resentment or fear or self-centered. Well, I try to stay out of self-centeredness. That's always a tricky one. But I have a check and balance system with this program. I have a higher power who's right there walking with me through life. And I'm able to check in with that higher power at any time to just pause and ask my higher power what they would have me be and what a shift that can make. You know, it can take that, it just that pause can make that difference between whether that food even enters my mind anymore. And usually it doesn't, thank God, because it's recovery. But the freedom that comes from having done this work is just nothing short of a miracle. That I don't have to look for those excuses. I don't have to have those resentments. I don't have to justify or rationalize behavior that I know is going to be harmful to myself. I don't do it perfectly, but at least I have a direction and I have a source of power that works for me today. And with that, I'll pass.
Well, thank you, Penny LC. Kathleen O, followed by Annabelle Z. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, Mo. This is Kathleen O, recovered in Northern California, not cured. So good morning, everyone. Jim thinking that taking a little whiskey in his milk was a good idea certainly does not seem too far-fetched or extreme for me, because I've been there and done that with food many, many times. When it comes to food, I am far from being normal in my thinking and my mind. You know, the food is powerful. I ate because I liked the effect. Now, a lot of people eat because they like the effect, but they have a shutoff valve and they stop. I have no clue what that feels like, because when I took the bite, and oddly, sometimes I could stop after a bite for a day or two, but I could never stop the obsession of the mind after that bite, and I would be binging in no time at all. And, you know, normal eaters, they take the bite and they stop thinking about it. Not me. Having an allergy of the body, an obsession of the mind, taking the bite meant I could never stop thinking about it. The only thing that would bring relief to me was to eat more, and the downward spiral would begin again. We can get freedom from the allergy after a few weeks, but without the steps, you know, we succumb to the desire and that thinking that a little whiskey in the milk is a good idea. And I think that's why it's so hard for people. They get 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, and they eat again. You know, it's always going to lead to another relapse. So when I allowed the food to have the power, my mind would always tell me that this time I could control it, that this time it was okay, that this time I could eat like others with impunity, and that this time one little bite of wedding cake at my own wedding was a good idea. And that bite led to a 50-pound weight gain in 3 months. So, you know, the insanity is the ability to see the truth that the food will kill me, because once I start, I can't stop. And why can't I stop? Because I have an allergy of the body and obsession of the mind. I do not have that shut-off valve. And I've come to accept that just because, you know, the same way that the color of my eyes are the color of my eyes. You know, the real problem is the insane thinking that even after achieving the knowledge and the wish of needing to leave it alone, I couldn't. I was always without defense from that first bite. You know, the crazy idea that this time it was going to be okay. So, you know, today it's like I have to ask myself, am I going to the power of the food or am I going to the power of God? I have a choice. Working these steps on a daily basis is choosing the power of God. Not working them is choosing the power of food. And the power of food is always going to bring me to suddenly having the thought, milk in my whiskey is a good idea. So with that, I pass because I know my time's up. Thanks, Mel.
Perfect. Thank you, Kathleen. Annabelle Z, followed by Mary G. Good morning, Annabelle.
Good morning, Mo. My name is Annabelle Z. I'm from Everett, Washington, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic, and I'm so grateful to be here this morning. Thank you for the lead and the person who read. I already forgot your name. I'm so sorry. The part in here that really gets me is – this the sound reasoning failed to keep him in check. The sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. And how, first of all, I love that they're talking about Jim, but they switch to we and our in this paragraph. And I love that because this is a we program and we're supposed to relate. So I don't have very long abstinence in the OA program. I started in OA when I was like 20, in my 20s a couple times, but it never stuck. And I just thought if I just worked a better, the other program, I would be fine, which I wasn't for 30 years until I came back last October. And I'd been abstinent in the program since, except for on Christmas Day. And I've shared this story before, but it's just so powerful to me of how I've asked my husband not to serve me the sauce. The sauce was on the plate when it got served. We were in a location where I couldn't take the sauce off of the plate. Like we had Christmas in the hot tub, okay, after a day of skiing. It was awesome. But I had my sauce and I'm like, well, I'll just eat it with the food it's supposed to go with, the shrimp. And so that went okay. So then I thought, well, you know, and then that entered my mind of, this is not being any too smart. Like the exact, this is like word for word. It's not whiskey and milk. It was plum sauce with the shrimp, you know? And I thought, well, maybe if I just do it with the next item on the plate, which it didn't really go with, then I'll be fine as well. And it's just so weird. I mean, here I had been abstinent since October 9th, had a great day. There was no sound reason whatsoever for me to continue eating that. Even I had asked my husband not to put it on the plate. It wasn't his fault, though. I chose to then go, well, that won't hurt me. It's supposed to go with this item. It, like sugar's supposed to go in coffee or something, you know? And so I did eat it. And, you know, I shared that it did not take me off into a binge. It didn't take me off into any kind of overeating. But I was so mentally obsessed with the fact that I'd done that, that I had to change my abstinent date. And so I did. But, you know, the insane idea just won seemingly so easily, even though I had some sound reasoning, like, well, that probably isn't such a good idea, you know? Like, I'm not supposed to have that sauce. You know, the second ingredient is definitely a binge food. Okay, well, thank you. So I'll pass.
And thank you, Annabelle Z. Mary G, followed by Faye B. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. Hi, this is Mary G, a compulsive overeater in Chicago, Illinois. So thank you for letting me share. And, you know, as I'm listening to everyone's shares, the thought that keeps crossing my mind is how, like, amazingly specific this, you know, he was able to write this, like how he was able to describe, you know, all of these tiny little details that go along with my disease. I was never able to verbalize my disease or really explain it, let alone even call it a disease. You know, I was just bigger than the other kids, and I like to eat more than everyone else. But this whole, you know, this mental phenomenon paralleled with sound reasoning. So, you know, we got these like right next to each other, sound reasoning, and then this mental issue going on. The insane idea won out. And it's so true. It's so true. The insane idea always won out for me. You know, when faced with, you know, I don't know, the vegetables or the cake, of course I was going with the cake, you know, knowing what was going to happen. I knew what the consequences were going to be, but I took it anyway because maybe this time it won't get me. Maybe this time it won't, you know, whatever. We all know the deal. So I'm just kind of like right now just sitting like in awe of how wonderfully this book is written. You know, how they say it's like in meticulous detail, I want to say, you know, it describes the the alcoholic, and absolutely. So, yeah, that's all I got. I will pass. Thank you.
And thank you for your share, Mary G. Faye B., followed by Sherry Joe. And after Sherry Joe, we will take some more names. Good morning, Faye.
Good morning, Mo. This is Faye B. in Mesa, Arizona. Today, gratefully recovered. The line that stood out to me in this paragraph was, next day we would ask ourselves, in all earnestness and sincerity, how it could have happened. And that was exactly where I found myself just a couple of months ago. The next day came for me after a relapse in November. I had had a couple of brushes with OA in the past, but I became involved with a vision meeting last January, worked through the steps with a wonderful sponsor, and for the first time in my life made it through all 12 steps and was living in the program all through the year with, you know, living in 10 and 11, 12, practicing, sponsoring, doing all the things that I thought I should have done. And one day came in November where maybe about four little incidents built on one another in one day. And don't you know, I turned to food without a thought. I walked into a place and got something I should not have had and ate it without stopping to call my sponsor, call an OA fellow. Worse, asking my higher power for help with resistance and what should I do for, you know, seek an inspired thought or action. So the next day came and I just could not believe what I had done. Like, how in the world could this have happened to me? And then the insanity ensued. I went back into all that stinking thinking stuff of, you know, maybe I don't need this. Maybe I can control it on my phone. Maybe I can have just a little. And I went on like that for about 4 weeks, just drifting and drifting back into that old state when, I don't know how, but by the grace of God and with the help of God, I came back, got a sponsor and worked through the steps. And what I found was that insanity, the restlessness, irritability, and discontent felt way worse than even eating the foods that I shouldn't be eating. And so gratefully, I'm back. I've worked through the steps again. And it has really come down to me that I just need to constantly work at enriching my spiritual connection with God, that I need to constantly stop and ask for help, an intuition, a thought, an action that is God-inspired. So for today, I'm abstinent, recovered, and loving this program, and I thank you, Mo, for your service and all the people on the line. I'm grateful to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Faye B. And before we go to Sherry Jo C., I just want to remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 37, the second paragraph down. You may think this is an extreme case, and we're just reading that one paragraph and commenting on that one paragraph only. So, Sherry Jo C., you are up, and then I will take more names after you. Good morning.
Good morning, Mo. This is Sherry Josie, recovered in Southern California.
Nico.
Thank you so much.
Nico.
Oops.
Oops.
Nico.
Oops.
Hang on. Okay, go ahead, Sherry Jo.
Hey. Oh, good morning. Thank you so much. I've been spellbound listening as we've been reading this chapter in the story of Jim. This paragraph, you may think this is an extreme case. To us, it is not far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us, including myself. Absolutely. I completely relate to the story of Jim. I was thinking about how, I think soon after I came into the program, somebody told me about the difference between a regular person and a compulsive eater. A regular person goes to the doctor with a vision problem, and the doctor says, oh, you know what? You're allergic to strawberries. If you eat strawberries, you're going to go completely blind. And the normal person says, oh, my God, okay, well, I'm done with strawberries. And the addict says, well, how many strawberries can I eat before things start becoming a little dim? You know, I mean, that is exactly the way that I was. I wanted to push it to the absolute limit and, you know, see basically really how much I could get away with while I could still get, you know, the sense of ease and comfort from having my food, but maybe be able to eat with impunity. And I didn't realize those two things are completely incompatible. There is no eating with impunity for a compulsive eater like myself. You know, and another thing I thought of, I mean, this does take me back to the beginning for myself, 1989. I'm messing around trying to be abstinent, but still trying to have my food. Those two things are incompatible. I remember I messed around with sugar-free foods. You know, I mean, I always had that impulsivity, not just the compulsivity, but the impulsivity. To me, the impulsivity is not just that I have to have it, it's that I have to have it now. And so I'm messing around with sugar-free foods. I needed to take my car to the dealership for some repair work, so I had bought a box of microwave sugar-free brownies. So, of course, I can still see myself in the kitchen of the house that I lived in, making these sugar-free brownies, thinking I'm just going to have maybe one or two. Well, I, ate, of course, ate the whole thing. And then, you know what? I didn't realize that I have a reaction to sugar, artificial sugar, where it gives me extreme diarrhea. I couldn't even make it to the dealership to get my car repaired. So, you know, it's that kind of thinking and that kind of like trying to negotiate with an illness that is non-negotiable that, you know, that for me, that was just part of the beginning of my surrender. And I don't believe that relapse is a necessary requirement for recovery. I really don't. But I know for myself in the beginning, I did go through a period of experimentation. I wanted to drive fast around corners. And I wanted to see just how fast I could go before I could crash. Then I realized I couldn't go fast at all. Like, I couldn't even go around corners. I crashed. And that, to me, is when my surrender began. You know, I started realizing this is non-negotiable. I can't mess around with this. It has to be absolute. And that, and gratefully, I had a home group at the time that it was called the Back to Basics Abstinence Meeting in downtown Detroit at Sinai Hospital. And those women... It was a hardcore meeting, but, you know, there was so much joy in that meeting because there was abstinence and recovery. And we used to, like, thank you so much. We used to laugh and joke about how we were on fire with recovery. And you guys have all given me that, you know, that fire back to my program. So I'm very grateful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jerry Josie from California. Okay. Just want to remind everybody, although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you haven't shared since last, if you shared last Thursday or Friday, then skip today and share tomorrow. So anyone would like to share? The lines are open.
Darian K.
Hi, Deborah G.
Wait a minute. I got Darian K. And who was after Darian K?
Deborah
G.
Okay, I got Deborah. Who was after Deborah?
Matt J.
Cindy. I got Matt J. F. I got Cindy C, Matt J.F.
Annette M.
J.F. Who was that?
Annette M.
Annette. Gotcha, Annette.
Yes. Thanks.
Good. And one more.
Liz A.
Liz A. I got you, Liz. Okay, let's go with that lineup. I got Darian K, Deborah, missed the last initial, Cindy C, Matt J, F, Annette M, and Liz A. And please
Susan
give us the name of the state. I'll put
Susan
you down
F
there, Susan.
If time.
Yeah, I'll put you
if
down, Susan. Yeah, okay.
Okay, thanks.
Please give us the name of your state when you identify. So I have Darian K, Deborah, Cindy C, Matt JF, Annette M, Liz A, and if there's time, Susan. Good morning, Darian K.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Oh, good. Okay. Thank you so much. This is Darian K from the Berkshires in Massachusetts, recovered compulsive overeater. Very grateful to be on the line this morning. I have the week off, so I get to listen to you guys every day. Such a gift. So first of all, I have to say thank you for the courage of the person that shared before me about what diet sugar-free things do to your body and your intestines. If that isn't insanity, I don't know what is, because, I could relate to that. You know, oh, it's sugar-free, big deal, you know, and so just keep eating them and or chewing on them or whatever, and boy, did it do havoc, wreaked havoc on my intestines. What I can relate to, the sound reasoning, I don't know how much sound reasoning I really had. My sound reasoning was you don't diet on the weekends. And the weekends start on Friday, in my opinion, Friday night. So why would you possibly stick to restricting yourself and feeling deprived on the weekends? The weekends were for cheating or binging or whatever. Treating yourself, I guess. Treating yourself because you did such a good job all week. And that is not sound reasoning by any stretch of the imagination. So that is how my diet days went until I found program. I found it in 1986. And again, I was just joining my mother and my sister. That's what we did. We joined all these Weight Watchers, diet workshops, Herbalife together, and then we cheated on the weekends or whatever. And so it wasn't a question of, if I was going to lose what I was doing, it was a question of when. And so when I found this program and I found out that there's so much more to it than taking a food plan home and giving it a whirl, I was pretty amazed and taken back, and amazed too that it helped my sister with her, not only her compulsive overeating, but her emotions. She was suicidal at the time, and the sugar and PMS were doing a job on her. So, just so grateful. So grateful I found this program through them, and that my reasoning is so much more on a level playing field. It's so I can actually listen to myself for the most part, my intuition, I should say, and then also bring it to my higher power. I do that daily, minute by minute sometimes when I'm in a stressful place, that I might not always have the answers, or I might react instead of respond. And so I need to really step back and, like people talk about, taking that pause with God and seeing what the right steps are to take, instead of, my fear-based reaction.
Time.
Thank you. So, just grateful to be with all of you and to know the answers and to not keep playing the games that didn't work for so long. Thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you, Darian Kay. Up next is Deborah. Give me your last initial and state, followed by Cindy C.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you so much for being of service, and thank you all that have made this meeting possible, and all the shares so far. Thank you for 12-stepping me. I'm Deborah G, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And, I was looking at in here where it talked about kind of thinking has been characterized of every single one of us. I am so grateful that I'm not the only crazy one with this thinking. And I'm also grateful that we're not all crazy at the same time. It's crazy. And, I like this thinking, curious mental phenomenon, thinking, sound reasoning, thinking, failed to hold us in check, thinking, insanity idea won out. So that thinking, if I'm in that thinking, that's my problem, thinking that I'm going to, the insane idea is going to win out is what I'm getting from this paragraph. And so that's been my experience in the past, evidenced by the attempts to think my way out of this. And listen to my thinking and thinking that what my thinking is the best thing. oh God, I it's not. And thank God that I can see that today. And I am so grateful for everyone. Thank you. Have a beauty day.
Thank you, Deborah G. Cindy C, followed by Matt J. F. Good morning. Cindy C.
Hi, it's Cindy C. Can you hear me?
I can.
Thank you. Cindy C. from Illinois, recovered from bulimia and compulsive eating. I hope it's okay that I read some notes that I wrote down. I'm not a great spontaneous speaker. Normal drinkers and eaters may think Jim's story is extreme because the facts seem simple, but the severe consequences are there. After a couple shots of whiskey, Jim is faced with asylum, loss of family, intense mental and physical suffering. On the surface, they're mostly right. Their thinking about food is not insane. But Bill is telling his fellows, us, this story because we know that it is truth. What happens to the mind-body of a normal eater is extremely different from what happens to a compulsive eater. Our thinking and actions around food are insane. So we identify in and have compassion for Jim because we know it has happened to us. I learned something valuable from Jim's story and have changed my behavior. I asked, why did the insane trivial excuse win out versus the sound reasoning? Does it always? How can I prevent that from happening to me today? As with much of this book, the reading seems easy, but it runs deep. I identified 9 of Jim's lies and denials from that morning and wanted to share about 2 of them. The first one is that Jim is ignoring a nagging need for a 10-step. The irritation was probably not slight, and the words with his boss were not nothing serious. Even if it was a slight irritation instead of being a rageful feeling, we 12-step people know that we don't have the luxury of holding on to even a slight negative emotion. Normal eaters probably do. Jim is just out of the asylum, has been through the 12-step a couple times. We know that any negative emotion could result in a binge if ignored. The second is that he uses a grain of truth. I'm not a whiskey drinker, but it makes sense that whiskey with milk probably does coat the stomach for most people and avoid some negative effects. Jim is twisting this grain of truth and engaging what the beginning of this chapter on page 30 calls the great obsession of every abnormal eater. Maybe this time, if I add milk with honey, I can, quote, control and enjoy my drinking. Jim is pretending to be a normal drinker. In this moment, though, Jim is actually pursuing the gates of insanity and possibly death. His built-in forgetter is working hard. He forgot that he will never, ever, ever, for the rest of his life, ever, be a normal drinker. For me, a normal eater. In this moment, he can't distinguish the true from the false. So now I am changing my behavior. Before having any contact with food, I am trying to do a quick mental 10-step. This includes grocery shopping, cooking, chopping, washing, reading recipes, cleaning up after, or even entering a restaurant. I jot down a negative motion or interaction that I may have had earlier in the day, and I review it later. As always, it's good to pause and invite God. With gratitude, I pass.
Thank you, Cindy C. Matt J.F., followed by Annette M. Good morning, Matt.
Thank you so much for your service. This is Matt J.F. as in Joint Fellowship of Junk Food in Kentucky, and I'm gratefully recovered today. The shares on the first calls and today's call have been so wonderful and so thought-provoking, and I want to thank everyone who shared. The things that keep coming up for me are when someone was sharing about the curious mental phenomenon that parallel with my sound reasoning, there inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for something. The thing that I thought of is I'm afraid of heights. And one of the main reasons I think I'm afraid of heights is when I approach a precipice, when I walk up to the edge of a drop that could kill me, there is a thought that comes to me, and the thought is, there's nothing between me and falling to my death but deciding not to fall to my death. And that terrifies me. I don't know why. And if there's a railing, the thought is the only thing that's keeping me from falling to my death is not climbing over this railing and falling off the edge. But for some reason with food, that was never enough. Obviously, I've never climbed over the railing and fallen over the edge, or I wouldn't be here sharing. But not so much with food. I heard earlier today more than once the idea that the first compulsive bite leads to the relapse. And what I thought of was the phrase post hoc ergo propter hoc, before the thing, therefore because of the thing. And the truth is, like I'm knocking wood, I'm abstinent today. I've been abstinent since February 25th of 2019. I assume I will relapse someday. To me, relapse is a thoughtful, purposeful, intentional consumption of a food that I do not eat today. Full stop. There's no negotiation. I am a person who does not eat those red light foods. And I realized it's important to me to pre-litigate that entire experience, because I don't want that first compulsive bite to lead to a full-blown relapse. I want for it to signal to me that there is some way in which my footwork was insufficient, was wanting, or that God is calling my attention to something that requires my attention. And that's all that it means. I don't want it to be a boogeyman in my life. I don't want it to be the monster under the bed that's going to devour me. I want it to be a part of my natural flow, because I believe that God is everything. And if I relapse, it has to include that too. So I'm grateful for today, because it, and to me, that's not planning for failure any more than thinking through how to steer out of a skid on icy roads is planning to do that. It's just figuring out what'll happen next. And I pass.
And thank you, Matt J.F. Annette M., followed by Liz A. Good morning, Annette.
Hi, it's Annette M. from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Thank you for your service. You know, the parallel idea I find so interesting, two train tracks, the phenomena of craving and sound reasoning. And, you know, when I'm having a thought that is just not sane, I'll give you a clear example. My kids turned 13 2 months ago, and I was abstinent prior to that. And I know that I don't eat sugar, and I decided I was going to make them this unique kind of melted, gooey thing combined with a nice sugary substance around it. And I thought it seemed innocuous to me. But, you know, I made it. It was their 13th pandemic birthday. It's a milestone. They're officially teens. I was making it like, it's all about me, what I'm going to do, and how they're going to think I'm a great mom and this and that. Well, as soon as I took it out of the oven, they said, ew, this smell is disgusting. I thought, you know, I was done, and in a split second, I started just cutting slices of this melted thing and justifying the expense. And the value, and I was totally disarmed by the phenomenon of craving. No reasonable thinking could have helped me at that moment. And there, I realize now, you know, there was 10 steps that should have been had, but I don't go back, I go forward. And I'm grateful that I have 2 months, close to 2 months and 2 days, of clean abstinence, and I wouldn't have gotten here hadn't I had that break, which is unfortunate. But, you know, as long as I keep coming back, as long as I keep listening to all you fellows, and we share our experience, strength, and hope as a community, I am growing and connecting and feeling God's presence in each moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Annette M. And we have about 2 minutes, so Liz A., you'll be our final share. Sorry, Susan, we can't get to you. Maybe tomorrow. Liz A., can you take 2 minutes?
Hi, this is... I'm sorry, I don't know if that just beeped. This is Liz A. from Michigan. The thing that really stands out in this reading, you may think this is an extreme case. And I feel like, yes, that is where my address is, the extreme case. I, one morning, early, many years ago, decided, didn't even drink coffee at that point, but that I was going to have ice cream in my coffee because, well, that was milk and sugar. And I was supposed to work an early shift at a job. And that binge was so horrific that I never made it to my shift. I did cocaine to lose weight. I purged to lose weight to manage. I overexercised. I fasted. You know, I was extreme, and yet I was going to beat the odds, which is also extreme. I just have to keep in one day at a time and know that there's a grace in this program. Yesterday wasn't like my food plan. Schedule got very off. My husband and I were running errands. And I got a hold of somebody last night and was just like, yeah, this was squirrely. And the beauty is just not having to go into that extremity, into the extreme, trying to manage. I don't need to manage. I need a higher power, and I need the 12 steps. I'll end with this. I heard someone say that the circuit breaker between the obsession and the compulsion is the 12 steps. And so I need the circuit breaker to interrupt my insanity. And that is the God and the God of my understanding and the 12 steps and the fellowship. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you very much for taking the 2 minutes. And with that, we'll end our shares. Thank you all for sharing. It was great, great shares, great paragraph. And we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer, and I will ask Betsy H. to read a vision for you. Good morning, Betsy.
Thank you, Mo. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditations what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then.